green are already in technical difficulties. I'm looking at a blank screen. What a great way to kick it back off.
Oh, yeah.
Long summer break with technical difficulties, as I say, knock, suit, cow, everybody. On today's show, we will catch up after a very long summer vacation. We will span the universe for the latest news on our favorite 80s action stars. And if that isn't enough, we are making a sharp right turn out of the Van Damme-verse, heading north into the Stallone-verse for 1987's Over the Top. He's driving headlong towards the biggest fight of his life. So I guess today is a very special edition of Nothing Worthwhile Presents Van Damme at a podcast about Jean-Claude Van Damme. We'll take a deep breath in and out as I say, no retreat!
And no surrender.
All right, let's bring him in. You heard his voice. Let me bring in my best friend, my partner in crime, Andrew Gruthius, on the East Coast, specifically Coral Springs, Florida. It's been quite a while. Gru, how the hell are you, my friend?
I'm doing very well, and I'm sorry that I can't meet you halfway today. We have, you know, our new technical systems here aren't working right out of the gate. I can see him. He can't see me. So Lord knows what I'm doing behind the screen.
Yes.
But I'm doing very well. I've been back in town for almost a week now. And huddling indoors because it's like 110 in the shade outside.
Is it really that hot?
No, not really. I mean, it's hot, but it's not that bad.
Okay.
It's not that bad. But yeah, everything is real good. Starting school this week.
Exciting.
Yeah, always exciting to start a new page in the book, as it were.
Well, you know, at this age, you know, it's always like, because Andy and I are both educators, and it's the same way school starts. You're excited. Then by day three, you know, the same stress.
Day three.
I look at myself in the mirror, you know, balding, paunchy, you know, black lines under my eyes. And then I go, oh, it'll be just one of those years.
For you, that's day three. For me, that's period three.
That's right. All right, so when does school year officially kick off for you guys?
Tuesday. Tuesday is our first day of classes. So that, you know, looking forward to that with a certain cautious optimism. So Tuesday is when all the kids come back all wired up from their summer hangovers. And we get to be there to extinguish their fires.
Let me ask you a quick question. How is your school enrollment? Has it been pretty consistent over these last few years, you know, coming off of COVID and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think so. There's still a waiting list for our school.
So
I believe enrollment is at 100%.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Good for you. All right. All right, well then, well, that was an uncomfortable pause right there. Well, let's move on, Gru, before we get to Over the Top. I don't know how we're going to do this one, but just count it out, Gru. Let's check out the latest news on our favorite aging 80s era action star. It's time for Van Damme It, Spanning the Universe.
Spanning the Universe. Yo!
Life Center. Begin a new you. Check out all of their medical weight loss programs at www.newyoulifecenters.com. That's N-U-Y-O-U, lifecenters.com. Or give them a call at 602-274-0068. Tell them that Moody & Gru sent you and receive a big 15% off your first service. New You Life Center, we are in this journey together. Just like this podcast, we are
yes.
in this journey together.
We're in it together.
A big Van Damme thank you to New You Life Center. Gru, let's start off with the man that we fashioned this podcast out of, Jean-Claude Van Damme. Gru, we talked about it, I think, briefly on the podcast, or maybe, is that you on the screen? Hold on.
You see me?
No, it's me. I'm looking at me. Oh. Looking at me. What? I'm such an idiot.
Yeah, I don't know why. It says my camera's on, and see, now you could see my initials, right?
Yes.
Because I turned my camera off. Now I'm pressing camera on, and you just see nothing, right?
I see nothing. I don't even see my
yeah,
camera box.
I don't know why.
Before
well,
I can see myself. And anyway, all right. Anyway, all right. So you can see me, though.
I can see you. Yeah.
All right.
Lucky me.
Grew, we did. Yes. we did talk about this. Perhaps I know off air. I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast, but just 1 week ago, Hulu released the Predator prequel movie, Prey, which was essentially the origin story of the Predator set in the world of the Comanche Nation 300 years ago. Andrew, just a yes or no, have you seen Prey yet?
No, I haven't even heard of it.
We did talk about this, the Predator prequel that's on Hulu.
I didn't think that was it. I thought you were talking about like a movie.
It is a movie.
No, but I didn't. I thought like it was called Predator or something, or like I didn't.
No, it's called Prey.
Okay, I remember talking about. All right, so this is that. All right, yeah.
Yes.
I wasn't aware.
Are you going to watch it?
Yeah, I was planning on watching when I thought it was Predator. So why not? Yes.
Okay.
I'm interested in that.
Are you a fan of the Predator series?
I'm a fan of the first movie. The second movie was kind of like a cultish kind of thing. Like, I kind of have a RoboCop 2 kind of relationship with it. It's really bad, but it's fun to watch.
Yes, I agree.
And I think I liked one of the Alien vs. Predator ones. I'm forgetting which one. I'm not like a fan like I am of Alien.
Okay.
You know, like I know each movie. Yeah, I will watch this because I really do. When it's done well and if it's reviewed well, I'll enjoy it. I'm sure I will.
Well, we won't get into it too much, but the early reviews are very positive on the movie. Prey sees Nara, a fierce female Comanche warrior, protect her tribe against a cosmic threat, using rudimentary tools to fight off the technologically advanced alien super fighter. Prey Gru is banking on the fandom of the sci-fi franchise that kicked off 35 years ago. Gru, you remember that original movie, Arnold, Carl Weathers, Jesse the Body Ventura, amongst others, as a team of commandos on a mission in a Central American jungle. Then when they come across the Predator, who's a fierce extraterrestrial warrior who kills for fun. Most sci-fi geeks know that it was indeed Jean-Claude Van Damme who was initially cast to play the fierce cosmic villain, the Predator. This was until a minor medical condition led to Jean-Claude being fired from the movie. Speaking in an interview with the Murder Master Music Show podcast, actor Bill Duke, who was in Predator, great veteran actor in a lot of...
He's also in Commando, I think.
Yeah, a lot of action movies. Bill Duke stated that the actor was fired, meaning Jean-Claude, was fired from the project due to him continuously experiencing dehydration and aggravating the producer as a result. Quote, so he had this stealth suit on. They put him on wires, and he flew up around in the trees, and the wires were on his back like he was flying. He had passed out twice from dehydration, and the producer came over to him and said, if you pass out again, I'm going to fire you. What a sweet guy. Exasperated, Van Damme replied, I'm not passing out on purpose. I'm dehydrated. Bill Duke further... it sounds like Van Damme, too, like the diva. He probably had his nails all buffed and like with a light coat on his nails. Bill Duke further details, 2 weeks goes by and the guy passes out. The producer goes over and fires him. However, Gru, the story doesn't just end there. It's also joined by several other storied rumors from the set of the film that paints Van Damme in a curious light. While he was indeed dehydrated on the set of the film, a second account from the special effects supervisor, a fellow by the name of Joel Hynek, reveals he was also fired for refusing to stop kickboxing on the set of the film. Speaking to the Hollywood Reporter on the film's 30th anniversary, Hynek stated, I was in Joel Silver's trailer, and he had called for Jean-Claude to come in to see him. And he comes in the trailer, and Joel says to him, look, you got to stop kickboxing, because Jean-Claude wanted to kickbox. And he was telling him, look, the Predator is not a kickboxer. Replying in his unique tone of voice, Jean-Claude quipped back, I must do that. That is how I see the Predator. before the producer walked in and bluntly stated, "Well, you're fired. Get out of here." What did Van Damme spit in response? "Kiss my balls. Kiss my balls."
He didn't say that.
That's what it says.
Kiss my balls.
There was an apparent third and final reason Van Damme was fired from the film, as he apparently broke a $20,000 prop of the Predator's head. Stunt coordinator Craig Baxley further recalled to the publication, "Van Damme was dressed in a costume that the production team had spent, quote, an absolute fortune on, and he got all hot and bothered. Freaking out, the actor took off the $20,000 head, threw it on the ground, and shattered. And Joel said, 'What the fuck are you doing?' And he told Jean-Claude, 'You'll never work in Hollywood again. Get off my set.'" Jean-Claude did recover from this early firing and certainly went on to become a bona fide action star in his own right. Any thoughts on Jean-Claude being fired from the set of the groundbreaking Predator movie?
It's kind of weird that he would have such like diva-like behavior that early on. That was like Predator was like 1986, right?
I believe it was either 86 or 87.
Yeah, that was like Van Damme was not a star yet. Like, so it's strange to hear that kind of behavior coming from somebody like that who's trying to make his way in. But look, whatever he did still got him to where he is. So it's, I guess it's kind of a good thing that he didn't get the part in Predator, because that would, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we doing the Van Damme podcast, maybe like two or three episodes ago, I think I had remarked or we had talked about how you know, over the course of a 30, 40, 50-year career, you're going to see a negative article about somebody at some point. Obviously, a guy like Steven Seagal has had a lot more than maybe a typical action star. But then all of a sudden you read, you know, I know you didn't really buy into it, but this you know, MMA guy said Van Damme, you know, was kind of rough on an extra in a physical scene. And then you read about this. And, you know, Van Damme does come across as a pretty decent guy. This is only me surmising. But I could totally see some of this diva-like behavior on the set. And I don't know why. It's just kind of listening to him and maybe early in his career, perhaps he was a little bit more ego-driven. That's all I'm saying.
I guess. But it's just, I don't know. It's just weird. Somebody that young, like you expect to see that from someone who's established.
Well, okay. So, No Retreat, No Surrender came out. Was that 85?
Probably around that, but it was like okay. Actually, yeah, it was probably around that because I remember it being like sort of a mishmash of Karate Kid and Rocky IV. So that's around
right, so
that time.
If you remember, Van Damme he's young, but he's a little bit older. I think he was like 26 or 25 or 26 when he did No Retreat, No Surrender. So he's still young, but he's not like, you know, a 22-year-old sitting on a Hollywood set. He's probably at this time around 28. I mean, I just yeah. Food for thought. That's all, you know.
Yeah, well, hey, look, either way, you know, I was watching what was I watching? It was – oh, God. Oh, it was something about Raiders of the Lost Ark, Indiana Jones. And they were talking about, like, casting. And they were talking about how, like, Tom Selleck was almost Indiana Jones. And it's like someone explained, like, hey, it was lucky that he didn't get the job because of that, we got both Magnum P.I. and Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in a way, it's sort of good that Van Damme didn't get the job then, because then Schwarzenegger wouldn't have been in Predator, and that's a great movie right there. So
no, but Jean-Claude played the Predator.
Oh, that's what it was supposed to be.
Yes, he was the guy in the Predator suit. Remember the final thing?
Yes,
he took the Predator head. He was dehydrated because he was under the suit. I'm sorry if I didn't explain that clearly, but Jean-Claude played the Predator. He was first cast to play the Predator. It's kind of common known. Even I knew that before the article.
I didn't know that.
Oh, all right. Well, here, there you go.
Yeah.
A rare moment in which I out Hollywood Andrew.
yeah, that's a shame then. That would have been pretty cool.
Well, Gru, we are entering the Stalloneverse today, and Andrew cued me into some current controversy involving the Italian Stallion. Oh, so yeah. Let's get into it. So, Andrew, take a deep breath. I got two articles. I did delete a little bit to kind of shorten its breath, but the controversy does continue to brew for the Italian Stallion, as there has been a rumored Drago project in the works that may move ahead without the consent of the very man who created the entire franchise, one Sylvester Stallone. However, there's some mixed thoughts. Some in the Hollywood community are for perhaps Sylvester, and some may feel he is bit off base. Courtesy of ScreenRant.com, Sylvester Stallone and the Rocky franchise have gone hand in hand for a long time. We know that Sly created the character back in the 1970s, and his work on the original script even earned him an Academy Award nomination. The Rocky franchise has proceeded over the years with some ups and, of course, some downs. And as the classic franchise wore on, some say that the quality of the Rocky movies have become somewhat diluted at best. The success of the spin-off Creed movies marked the reintroduction of modern realism to the Rocky franchise and shifting the focus onto the illegitimate son of Apollo Creed, Adonis, played by Michael B. Jordan, allowed for Stallone to step into a supporting role, with Balboa acting as the younger Creed's trainer. The popularity of the Creed movies has renewed interest in the entire franchise, but it also proved that Rocky still has exciting stories to tell that may not solely focus on Rocky Balboa. However, news of a planned spinoff centered around one of Rocky's biggest rivals, Ivan Drago, played by Dolph Lundgren, proved upsetting to the franchise creator. Sylvester Stallone criticized the Drago spinoff announcement, taking to social media. And I just forwarded ahead. I am so sorry. I'm doing this finger pad thing that I hate. Taking to social media to call out the film's producers for not including him in their plans. Stallone was upset he was not consulted regarding the intended new direction for the franchise. Stallone leveled criticism at the idea, clearly hurt that his role in creating the characters and their stories was seemingly disrespected by the decision. Article goes on to say that Stallone is rightly annoyed about the Drago spinoff because without him, the characters would never exist. And so far, he has shaped their stories in line with his own creative vision. Gru, the Rocky franchise has had its issues regarding the rights to its titular character, with Stallone being vocal about his disappointment at not owning Rocky's movie rights. The announcements of a spinoff that Stallone wasn't even aware of only fuels the controversy even more. He created Ivan Drago, and his frustration and disappointment are perfectly natural. Stallone himself has insisted that he will not be appearing in the upcoming Creed 3 movie. It seems that the franchise will move on without Stallone's continued presence. Stallone stepping away from Creed 3 came with the admission that he believes the film's writers will do a good job with his characters, effectively handing the reins of the franchise over. However, when it comes to the character of Ivan Drago, Stallone doesn't seem ready to do so. The author does point out that it's not unreasonable to assume that the Winklers, who hold the rights to Rocky, believe that it was time to better explore Ivan Drago's apparent redemption story. With Rocky not returning for Creed 3, now seems as good time as any. That's not me saying it. That's the author, for the Rocky franchise to explore stories that are independent of the main character. Now, Gru, what did on the Dolph Lundgren side? It's a lot shorter, but Dolph Lundgren finally responded after Stallone criticized him for attaching himself to a potential Rocky spinoff. Lundgren took to Instagram to clarify details of the spinoff after being called out by Stallone. He revealed that there has not been, quote unquote, an approved script for the project, nor a director. Quote, Lundgren, just to set the record straight regarding a possible Drago spinoff, there's no approved script, no deals in place, no director, and I was personally under impression that my friend Sly Stallone was involved as a producer or even as an actor. Quote, there was a press leak last week, which was unfortunate, so all the fans can relax. There you go. Stallone again criticized Irvin Winkler and his sons, Charles and David, for picking clean the bones of the Rocky character Drago for the potential series. Stallone did make a verbal jab at Lundgren. Quote, Sylvester Stallone, by the way, I had nothing but respect for Dolph, but he never told me about what was going on behind my back with the character that I created for him. Real friends are more precious than gold. Lundgren had previously spoke about a possible spinoff to the Hollywood Reporter in 2021. Quote, Lundgren, by the way, I think there's some talk about doing a whole spinoff to on Drago with MGM. That was back in 2021. Now let's throw it to our residential Stallone archivist, Andrew Gruthius. Guru, you got Stallone, you got Lundgren, you got Rocky, you got Drago, and a bit of a PR mess. Who took the opening round?
Well, the fight belongs to the producers, whoever owns the, just
work with the talk up. Come on, please.
Well, yeah, the producers are already won. They can do what they want. The fight's over.
All right. All right. Good night, everybody. Thank you.
No. Everybody is right to a degree. Stallone is right in that morally and ethically, everybody here should be going through him as far as the Rocky universe is concerned.
Agreed.
Absolutely. Legally, they have zero responsibility to him. Unfortunately, that's the deal that he made when he got this to get Rocky made. Now, from what I understand, he's made all his money from the Rocky movies, from each movie, meaning the profits to each movie, not like the franchise or whatever. The franchise rights have always belonged to those producers, Irwin Winkler and Robert Chartoff.
So hold on. So are you saying Stallone? Are you saying Stallone has made his money off of the? Is that what you're saying?
Like the individual movies? He's getting paid $15 million to star, write, and direct Rocky IV, and he'll get points on the back end, meaning money from the profits.
Understood. Okay.
So,
go ahead.
But the producers are the ones who can do whatever they want with the story and the franchise. One thing I don't know if they own is his likeness. Like, I don't know if they can create a Rocky Balboa, like a Rocky video game, if they wanted to, without his consent to use his physical likeness. But the story and the characters, they belong to the producers. Dolph Lundgren's side is, and I believe him, I saw him say he probably figured that Stallone was automatically involved, and all of this got out way before. You know, these guys don't speak to each other every day. It's not like, you know, it's not like they text each other, oh, guess what, I'm doing this, and they, you know, their relationships don't work that way. So I think Stallone, and Stallone, God bless him, is probably handling this the wrong way.
Okay, so here's my point, because I agree with you, because I think him going on social media is a little bit of a, I don't want to use the word, it's a little bit of a move that I think a guy like him, because my thing is this, well, going back to your comments, I will criticize Lundgren a little bit. I mean, if Dolph Lundgren legitimately received an offer for a Drago spinoff, you don't think he would have contacted Stallone at some point or text him and say, hey, you know, I don't know. I don't know if I really buy into that. I just know, I mean, they're supposedly, I get it that they don't speak every day. I'm sure that they're friendly, if not friends. So that's a little bit of a curious move. I'm not going to say he has to call him up right at the moment, but I imagine Stallone being the creator of the, you know, Rocky franchise, and Dolph's getting a, you know, sort of a spinoff from that, that Dolph would reach out to him or say, hey, I'm excited about this opportunity. And Stallone could have been like, well, what are you talking about? I feel like Stallone going on Instagram or social media, he's an older guy. If something's going to be done, that's a face-to-face, backdoor, backroom politics.
Agreed.
And that's how it gets done. I don't know. Going on to Instagram and kind of, I would expect that of you know, Miley Cyrus or something like that. You know, I don't know. Sylvester Stallone, I just felt like it puts him in a little bit of a, kind of like a little bit of a wissy kind of light.
Yeah, I don't.
You know, I don't know.
I sort of agree. I'm like, when I'm watching this, I'm like, why are you telling us? All you need to do is tell me there's a Rocky movie without Rocky, and I won't go see it. You know, I'm not going to see Creed 3 unless it's supposed to, I told you that, unless it's supposed to be like this incredible movie. But, you know, it's the Rocky universe, and without Rocky, it doesn't mean anything to me. And although something does intrigue me about a Drago story, but still, it's Rocky without Rocky. So, you know,
I hear you, but you wouldn't, I mean, maybe to see Drago's upbringing and hard-boiled Russia and his hard existence, or redemption story.
I'm not sure because
I mean, you didn't love the way they closed Creed 2 with Drago jogging with his son, and you maybe there's a redemption story there. I don't know. That was probably, as I said in the Creed 2 review, the Drago piece. In a sense, was more exciting to me and more interesting to me than the Creed piece for that movie.
Yes, and I agreed with you then, and I agree with you now. The only thing is, it would have to, in my mind, it would have to involve Rocky in some fashion, because he's connected directly to that guy's story. So, you know, but either way, you're right. Excuse me. You're correct. Stallone could do better than just going on Instagram, or TikTok, like Miley Cyrus.
I know. I know. What is he doing?
What am I going to do? You know.
I heard. Stallone went on TikTok and he did that Zanzibar thing with Billy Joel. I got the old man's
jazz guitar.
I know they do that stupid thing. Yeah, I the thing about Creed 3, I'm not going to my whole thing with movies is I wait and see anyway, because I don't really enjoy going to the movie. But if it's good, I will go and see it, because I was thinking about your logic. And so the first thing that came to my mind was Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul. So Breaking Bad, again, I'm not going to – everyone's heard of that TV show. But then they do a spinoff with Bob Odenkirk. That's in that universe, and then in the final season, on the last episode, you see the two big characters, the Jesse Pinkman and
Walter White,
Walter White in the final episode, and I say to myself, well, I guess with that thinking, I would have never watched Better Call Saul, and in some ways, Better Call Saul was just as exciting and just as inventive as Breaking Bad, so. I'll probably go see, I'll be a little bit more eager perhaps than Gru to see Creed 3. I'm not going to kill it for not having Stallone. I think it could be a loss, but who knows if they're able to spin it into a more creative space, then can't say I'm not for it. I think the way they closed Creed 2 was a nice way to end Stallone, and I think you had even commented that you didn't expect to see Stallone again in as the Rocky character in any sort of film vehicle after Creed 2. I believe that's what you said on our podcast.
Well, I think because he said that, I'm pretty sure it's because he announced, I remember he burned the hat or something the last day of filming. There was footage of it or something
Oh my God, oh Lord! What is he? Did he leave his boxing gloves in the middle of the ring at WrestleMania?
It's kind of like when I said I wasn't going back to camp again 20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. I remember that. We threw your whole party, and then the next day you're like, "I'm back." Thanks. All right. Well, I think we have similar views on it. I think they should have given a nod to Stallone and made him part of that process.
Well, the guys who sell their music catalog. Like Springsteen sold his music catalog. He owned it. He got paid for it. Now they can do whatever the hell they want with it. So it's the same thing with Rocky, except Rocky never had it. Except Stallone never had it to sell. So
okay, that's a big difference.
But they're in the same situation. Stallone's like I created this. I wrote every word that this guy ever said, and he doesn't even belong to me. That's because of the deal he signed.
Okay, fine. I think the other thing is, All right. Well, my only other point would be, listen, Bruce Springsteen got paid a bajillion dollars.
Right, but now they're in the same situation.
He should not complain.
Oh, he's not. But I'm saying
if Glory Days is on a Good Humor commercial, then you know, hey, tough shit. I mean,
yeah,
exactly.
He chose to sell. The difference is Stallone. You know, when he was first developing Rocky, the producers had him where they wanted him, meaning that okay, sell us. You know, we'll pay you for the property, and then you know, we'll keep doing it until nobody wants to see it anymore, but it still belongs to them.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. We'll see how it plays out. Gru, let's move on. Over the Top is a 1987 American sports drama film starring one Sylvester Stallone. It was produced by and directed by Menachem Golan. And its screenplay was written by Sterling Siliphant and Sylvester Stallone. Grew today's Van Damme podcast, Stalloniverse. Over the Top is brought to you by New U Life Center. Spread the love, man. Follow New U Life Center on Instagram to take advantage of their specials and monthly giveaways. Let's start your journey. Check out all of their programs. Let's start your journey. I think of the Filipino singer from Journey. What's his?
Arnel Ojeda, something like that.
Let's start your Arnel Pineda. Check out
Arnel
all of your
Pineda.
Programs.
Arnel Perry.
God, by the way, he's like 53. He was bouncing all over the stage when I saw them with Def Leppard, by the way, in Phoenix. All right, anyway.
Yeah, you told me about that. I heard that.
Yeah,
I thought you loved it.
I thought the guy was like in his 40s. I mean, he was really bouncing all over the place, boy. Check out all of their programs, www.ulifecenters.com, and UYOU. Whether that's medical weight loss, balancing those hormones, medical aesthetics, cosmetic injectables, and laser treatments, give them a call at 602-274-0068. Tell them Moody and Gru sent you in and receive a big 15% off your first service. Looks like one Andrew Gruthius will be at New U Life Center in WrestleMania. Late March, we're going to get him in there.
That's right. Marie's finally going to see what this poll, the whole thing is about.
Yeah, that'll be fun, actually. You'll get a kick out of it.
Damn right.
All right, Gru, we never really talked about director Menachem Golan. Menachem Golan was an Israeli film producer, screenwriter, and director. He's from Israel.
Yeah.
Ain Keloheinu, Ain Gabogeinu, Ain Kamakeinu. Come on. Ain Kamoshienu. I was always a sucker for Kamoshi. I always loved that line.
I don't know. Kamoshi?
Yeah,
well, that meant the song was over and we could eat.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I'm half Kamoshi on my mother's side. I didn't know if you knew that.
I do know.
He was best for co-owning the Canon Group with his cousin Yoram Globus. Canon specialized in producing low to mid-budget American films, primary genre films, during the 1980s. After Golan and Globos, I did see there was a documentary about them, I believe, on Netflix.
I saw
it. Significant filmmaking success in their native Israel. During the 1970s, Golan produced films featuring actors such as Sean Connery, Sylvester Stallone, Chuck Norris, Jean-Claude Van Damme, and Charles Bronson, and for a period was known as a producer of comic book-style films like Masters of the Universe and, of course, the Golden Egg, Superman 4, A Quest for Peace, and a very low-budget Captain America, and his aborted attempt to bring Spider-Man to the silver screen. I'm looking at some of the films that Menachem Golan produced over the years. Enter the Ninja, 1981. Hospital Massacre, 1982. Delta Force, 86. I heard of that one. Hannah's War, I believe I heard of that one, 88. Mack the Knife, 89. Then it looks like by the 90s, he kind of fizzled out, and he had movies up to 2008. Gru, any thoughts on the erstwhile director of Over the Top, Menachem Golan? I think we did talk about them one time earlier.
Well, he wasn't usually a director. They were usually the producers.
Right.
And they produced like tons of these 80s, you know, schlocky, whatever, just tits and ass and fun and low budget ridiculousness. But yeah, I did see that that documentary. It was called Electric Boogaloo. Yes. Because they did the Breakin' movies, Breakin' and Breakin' 2.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yeah. So they would sign big stars to a lot of money, and that's what would eat up all the production budget. So like all these low budget things would, you know, they'd pay like Chuck Norris, you know, half the money they had to star in Missing in Action and Missing in Action 2. The movies themselves wouldn't be very good, but they'd still garner a lot of people would go see them. And look, if you make a movie for $10 million and $15 million, and you bring in $15 million, you just made a profit of $5 million. I mean, to them, that's a win. And I think the way the movie business works, even the big studio movies, they make so many movies, most of which lose money. They finance those to get the winner. Meaning, like, it's like betting on a whole bunch of horses. If one comes in, it's going to cover all your losses. And I think that's the way that Canon sort of did their thing, because some of their movies did make a good amount of money.
Are you saying that that's how movie companies run these days, or are you saying back in the 80s they would just put out, it was more about churning out film after film and hopefully one hits and we make all of our money? Or are you saying, is that kind of how you say Hollywood operates these days as well?
I think it still does to a point, not to that point, but, you know, they expect these movies to turn a profit. That's why they spend so much money on them. But there's a lot of movies out there, you know, most of which nobody ever sees. But they, you know, everyone thinks they've got the next big hit on their hands. And it's like, if you throw enough shit against the wall, something's bound to stick. So that's why there are a lot of crappy movies. Everyone thinks they've got the next big thing on their hands. Really, there are only one or two of them. So it's like, you just keep shooting until you score. I still think it is kind of like that. They try to do the best they can, but Canon made it into an art form. You know, they knew their movies were shit. They just, you know, they just wanted to make enough money to produce the next one. That's kind of the way that they operated.
Yeah, I think the big difference being in 1980s did not have the available options that movies have today in 2020, meaning, you know, there's 1,001 streaming services. Obviously, there's always the overseas market, but, you know, we've talked about, you know, streaming and overseas markets as, you know, secondary sources of income for movies, or second lives or second chances for movies.
Right.
Whereas like in the 80s, I guess it was going to theater and that was it.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was video as well. But if you think of some of the movies you mentioned, like, there was popularity. Breakin' was a hit. Breakin' 2 was kind of a hit. The Delta Force, that's not a bad movie. It's really good, actually. And it made money. You know, so they had their share of winners. Then they would have their share of, you know, Superman 4s and Masters of the Universes. But, you know, they did some interesting stuff. Let's put it that way. Did you see the documentary?
I did.
It's really good.
Like, yeah.
It's really fun to watch.
Yeah, I think, was that part of, was it a standalone documentary? Or
yes.
It was a part of, okay, yeah, yeah. No, I did
was,
see it.
Yeah,
I
it was, it. It was on its own. It was very interesting to watch. And they, you know, they did things the way they did them for business reasons.
Well, when you were talking about the salary structure in the budget meeting, you know, they would get a big star and let's say that would chew up 70, 80, 90% of the budget, you know, with only a relatively small cash outlay for the other parts. Maybe think of like a school budget. Really, is majority of a school budget goes to staff salary. And then, you know, it's just a question of those other little pieces, you know, going to that delicious school lunch.
Yeah, but if you're Menachem Golan and you say, okay, we can spend $12 million for Sylvester Stallone, who is arguably the biggest star in the world right now, meaning back in 86, when this movie was made, or we could spend a third of that on Jeff Speakman and have him star in this movie, and then nobody will come to see it. So at least with Stallone, that might bring in 6 to 7 or maybe even $10 million worth of tickets on his name alone at that time.
Yep.
At least that's what they were. That's what they're going for. So it justifies the salary.
Well, I think that's a good time to transition over to an all new segment. It's Van Damme It, Did You Know? We're going to try a little new segment here. Yeah, it's Van Damme It, Did You Know? And Van Damme It, Did You Know? Of course, is brought to us by New Life Center. And yeah, we've already spoke about them.
One thing I did not know is that we were doing this new segment. I like that.
Yeah, well, New Life Center is looking forward to serving and working with you on all your healthcare needs. New Life Center, it's what we're all about. Gru, did you know that years later, Sylvester Stallone explained why he agreed to appear in Over the Top? Quote, Menachem Golan kept offering more and more money until I finally thought, what the hell? No one will see it.
Well, I didn't know that, but didn't he write the script?
He co-wrote it with Sterling Silliphant. I think he's the new character on NXT, Sterling Silliphant. Actually, I want to say this. This little tidbit, this upsets me.
Go ahead.
Because it sounds like in Stallone's mind, which it probably was, and I say there's nothing wrong with it because you only live one life. But, you know, if this was just a rote cash grab, then shame on everybody. That's what I'm – again, I'm not saying I wouldn't do it because you got one life to live and why not pad your checking account. But, you know, what the hell? You know, he kept offering me more and more money until I finally thought, what the hell? No one will see it. When I stepped back after I read that quote, it was like, well, you know, what do you expect from this movie then?
Well, but that's – I think that's a tale as old as time. I think a lot of people do that. A famous example is like Marlon Brando for Superman. Like he thought that was going to be a complete bomb, but they offered him like $5 million for like 3 days' work, and he's like, "How can I not? How can I turn down that kind of money?"
Okay, but wasn't Super? I mean, what, are you telling me Superman was a Golan product? I mean, Superman was
no. It wasn't.
I don't know it like you, but I'm assuming there were quality people. Donner, right?
Was attached to the project. But I'm speaking to your point, like
okay, I get you. Yeah, yeah.
No one will see it. I'll just take the money. Like a lot of people do that. You know, people I used to work for. You know, they would do these movies that nobody would see, but they do them because that's what they do for a living. They make money, and they often sell to the highest bidder, just like any other business. So I don't fault Stallone for you know, saying no, 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 and then all of a sudden, here's a number, and he's like, well, shit, I better take this. You know, like, I don't fault him for that.
Yeah, it sounds like the whole scene with History of the World was it, I forget the actress. She's looking at all the men, and she goes, "No, no, 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 no,
yeah, yeah.
No, 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 yes,
yeah." was that Madeline Kahn?
I think yeah, it was Madeline Kahn. That's one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah.
Gru, did you know that Rick Zumwalt was actually the studio's third choice to play Sylvester Stallone's rival? They originally wanted arm wrestling champion Clive Dean, but he was so massive compared to Stallone, it wouldn't have looked believable. So they went next to professional wrestler Ox Baker. When Ox Baker didn't pan out, the role went to Zumwalt. Gru, did you know?
No, I didn't. And thank God, because Zumwalt is awesome as Bull Hurley. I don't care what anybody says. There's only one Bull Hurley, and that is Zumwalt. So thank God.
Yeah, Ox Baker, he would have that would have been like his second sort of notorious movie role. So I was kind of surprised to read that. Ox
what
Baker. Scary looking dude.
What else
scary
did Ox Baker dude. Do?
Escape from New York.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, now I remember. no, I didn't
Gru,
know that.
Did you know that Rick Zumwalt was paid $10,000 to shave his head for the film? He liked it so much, he never let his hair grow back. Did you know?
No.
Okay, thank you.
Wow.
motherfucker. All right. I'll give that one as just filler. Grew, did you know that John Wetton, the lead singer of the rock group Asia, sang Winner Take It All for the movie? The producer didn't think his voice was mean enough, so the song was offered to Samuel Hagar, whose version ended up on the soundtrack. Hagar did a music video to promote the song in the film, which featured both Zumo and Stallone. Andrew, it's Winner. Did you know about that girl?
No, I didn't. I knew that. I thought Winner Take It All was all Sammy Hagar all the time. I did not know that. But I have a Did You Know as well.
Go ahead.
I see. You're sharing your screen. All right. No. Here.
What are you, Mr. Exposition?
No.
He's sharing his screen.
No, I didn't. I thought you disappeared for a second. No, my did you know is that it's the same thing. It's the same thing with the opening song of the movie. What's it called? In This Country by Robin Zander of Cheap Trick fame.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
That was Robin Zander. Okay.
That song, certain versions of the movie, foreign versions, I think, open with the same song, but for whatever reason, sung by Eddie Money, not Robin Zander. It's like in America you see it by Robin Zander. In other countries you see it by Eddie Money. It's weird. Same song, different singer.
Why do you think they do that?
I have no idea.
Why do you read like movies like the European import has? They'll do stuff like that
it's stuff with rights. Like even someone like Sammy Hagar or Eddie Money, you know, rest in peace. You know how like in the credits for movies they say like Sammy Hagar appears courtesy of Warner Brothers Records. Do you ever see that before? Like in the credits.
Yeah.
So these guys have exclusivity to their record companies. So if a song of theirs is used or something of theirs is used in a movie or in something like a TV show, not only do they have to get paid, the people who they work for have to get paid. So sometimes, like, you know, for example, for this Over the Top, when they don't want to pay certain people, maybe it costs a lot more money to have, you know, the guy, I don't know why it would, but to have the guy from Cheap Trick sing it in another country, and maybe Eddie Money, foreign, whatever, is connected, his record company is connected to, I guess, Warner Brothers, which is who released this movie. But it's all business. It's all about rights and all about, you know, who works for who and all that crap.
I would imagine in 1987, while pre-Van Halen, or was he pre-Van Halen?
No, Sammy Hagar, that was during Van Halen.
All right, so, I mean, I'm assuming they would have had to pay him a pretty penny to do this song.
Yeah, they must have. He was already a well-known recording artist even before Van Halen. So, yeah, I would say it probably cost them a lot more money to have Sammy Hagar sing the same song as who was the other guy?
John Wetton, I guess, who's the lead singer from Asia.
Oh yeah, yeah. Sammy Hagar was a big.
Oh yeah.
Well, I'm sorry. Sammy Hagar was a rock star at the time.
Come on, let's kick it. A little bit of Sammy Hagar.
All right,
when
let's
it
go.
All.
Well, I can't hear it. The sound's not going. I can't hear it. We can't hear it.
Oh, really?
Well, let's sing it. The winner takes it all.
The winner takes
loser
it all.
Takes a fall. Yeah, I don't know why we can't hear it.
The fucking thing sucks.
Just this is no. This is look. We got to go back to Zoom. We're using Microsoft Teams here, and we're not as familiar with it because.
I'm familiar with Teams, but by the way, I love my I love right here. Elephant Boy craps his pants.
So why can't I hear the thing then?
I don't know. Maybe it'll come over on the actual.
No, it
podcast.
Won't.
I would hear it.
That's
I don't
weird.
Know why, because my sound is. Hold on, share.
That's weird. But I know what you were playing. So just for fun.
Craps.
Wait, hold on. Relax. Not all is lost. You know, because we can always do this. I've got this. The winner takes it all. I'll be right with you, everybody.
Oh, crud.
Hey, look.
We just lost two downloads in India.
All right, so this is, let's see if, yeah, here we go. Yeah. Can you hear that?
Not a thing.
You can't hear it?
No.
Wait, hold on. All right, let's see if I can, all right, so, hold on. Can't hear it, huh?
No. All right, let's go.
All right, good job, Sammy. Yeah. I don't know why. I don't know why that. We gotta figure this one out. But in any case, that was Sammy Hagar. Winner takes it all.
Let's get back to it. I got a couple of more did you knows. Gru, did you know that in one of the final matches, Sylvester Stallone goes up against Mad Dog Madison, played by Randy Rainey? They would come up against each other again in Rambo 3. Did you know?
No, I didn't know that. I mean, I know I'm familiar with all those guys, but I did not know that that one. Mad Dog Madison, is he the guy who drinks the castor oil? Is he one of those guys?
I think so.
Like the guy in the camouflage, the FUBAR shirt. I think that's Mad Dog Madison. Yeah, I don't remember him in. I don't remember him in Rambo. Which Rambo?
It says Rambo 3.
Oh, yeah, Rambo 3. No, I don't remember him. That's interesting.
Here's an interesting one. Gru, did you know that actor Don Johnson was originally envisioned for this film before Canon made the choice of focusing on star power? They chose to cast Sylvester Stallone instead for the lead role of Lincoln Hawk. Gru, did you know?
No, but that they made the right decision. I mean, this was Stallone is Lincoln Hawk. I'm sorry. It's a great...
Gru, did you know that Sylvester Stallone and Susan Blakely appeared together in The Lords of Flatbush years earlier before they were stars?
Yes, I did know that. I knew that that's with Henry Winkler and Perry King. That's pre-Rocky, The Lords of Flatbush. But yeah, I did know that Susan Blakely and Stallone were in that movie together. Yeah, did know.
And Gru, did you know that Robert Loggia and Susan Blakely also both appeared on the soap opera Falcon Crest during different seasons? Did you know?
That one I was not aware of.
Gru, over the top is rated PG. I'm sure you know that one. Its runtime is 1 hour 33 minutes. Let's take a look at the cast of Over the Top. Sylvester Stallone as Lincoln Hawk, David Mendelhall as Michael Hawk, and Callahan. Okay, Rick Zumwalt as Bob Bull Hurley, Robert Loggia as Jason Cutler, Susan Blakely as Christina Hawk, Bruce Way as John Grizzly, Terry Funk as Rucker, and Magic Schwartz.
Magic Schwartz.
Smasher.
I have a Magic Schwartz.
Here comes the axe, and here comes the smasher, the demolition, walking disaster. Yeah. All right. Gru, let's take it back a little bit seriously now. Any thoughts on the casting for Over the Top?
Well, it's very hard for me to criticize any of the casting because, to me, there is a perfection about this movie that I can't get over, that I can't envision anybody else in any of these roles, even the Terry Funk bodyguard role. Just like everything fits so perfectly.
Have you lost all objectivity for this movie?
I must have. I remember telling you that I wanted to do this movie because I wanted you to like analyze me. Like, why am I the only one?
Well, first of all, that's assuming a negative review. I did watch this movie twice, and then I put on about the first half of it yesterday And then I had to walk the doggies and blah, 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 blah. Moved on with my day. But I definitely have a lot of thoughts about this movie. I mean, in terms of the casting, you don't get any better than Robert Loggia as like the evil grandpa. I mean, right. he's got that shit down pat. I mean, that guy could play that kind of role backwards and forward. And I guess, you know, I knew of Susan Blakely. I mean, she does a fine job as like a mother in distress. And, you know, David Mendelsohn, all joking aside, I feel like that kid was kind of around this time. I remember, I think he was in a soap opera, maybe General Hospital. I feel like he was kind of an it kid for a while in Hollywood. Do you know anything about David Mendelsohn's career?
The only thing I remember him in besides this is the sequel. You're going to hate me. Do you remember the movie They Call Me Bruce with yes. Johnny Yoon, the Hawaiian comedian?
Yeah.
Well, they did a sequel called They Still Call Me Bruce. And David Mendenhall was an orphan. And the whole movie was about the guy trying to save an orphan. That's the only other thing I think I've ever seen this dude in. He might have done like a movie with like Christina Applegate, like some kind of like gritty thing, but
I think he was on a major soap opera for a while. And I think it was General Hospital. I'd have to look that up. But
not familiar with it. But at the time, I remember he looked and seemed like a familiar face.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah.
All right, crew, let's get this shit started. You ready for the plot of 1987 arm wrestling tour de force?
That's right. Over the top? Yes, please.
Well, we get Lincoln Hawk. He's a truck driver. He arm wrestles for extra cash. He has an estranged wife, Christina. She's suffering from heart disease, and she asks that they allow her ex-husband to pick up their young son, Michael, from military school. We find out that Hawk had left them 10 years earlier. Michael's wealthy grandfather, Jason Cutler, believes that Hawk has no right to be in his grandson's life. Michael distrusts Hawk initially and treats him with contempt at every turn. So we got that opening stanza of the movie. I'll take a little bit of a break. I wrote some comments on some of this stuff. What'd you think of the opening stanza of the movie, kind of how they set the plot forward and how they introduced some of the early characters?
I think it's done Hollywood 101. It's perfect. You know who these people are right away. It's got a really nice opening. I do love that song, In This Country, by da-na-na-na. The miles go by like water. He's going to pick up his. Look, there's a lot wrong with how it's done, because and you could nitpick so much, but the problem is that once you're in that truck with Stallone, you're with him. Like he's Sylvester Stallone. He's just so winning. He's just so, I don't know. You just, the way they set it up is like you are 100% on his side going forward no matter what happens. He wins you over immediately without saying a word. So I do like the setup. I think they overdo it a little bit, like especially when like when he gets to the military academy and he's walking in and they go to the filmmakers go to great lengths to show us everybody looking at him like, who's that? Like, what's he doing here? Like, they do a little bit much on that. I remember that continues to bother me. But other than that,
this movie early on is the king of exposition. It's completely over the top.
Yes.
I mean, I find it. I know. I mean, you still look at that. I hear your review. You don't feel, and I hear that you are a little bit critical. But I mean, essentially, you still feel the same way about the movie that you did 30 years ago?
Yeah, and I have a deeper appreciation for it today than I did then.
All right, well, I do appreciate you sticking to your guns, but yeah. I watch this crew, and it's like So, and it's funny you mentioned the scene with him walking into the military academy, because the movie, even that opening stanza, they're trying to, you know, he's a good guy. He washes his truck.
Yeah.
He, you know, he does his job well.
He brushes his teeth.
He's a common man. He brushes his teeth outside with hose water. He wears his shirt, no shirt with suspenders, because, you know, tough American guys wear their no shirt with suspenders.
But don't you appreciate how shameless they are in that, though? Isn't there something to be said for, hey, we are going over the top with this. We are going to treat the audience like they're morons and enjoy it. You know, I mean, that's
if you're asking me today, I mean, I have to review the movie as 51-year-old Evan Moody. And I'm not going to kill the movie. Maybe my opening comments might seem that way. I'm not going to kill it, but, it's just, you know, again, you know, they're trying to set up, you know, evil grandfather and evil wealthy grandfather, no less.
Yeah.
And fighting the proletariat ex-husband, you know, the good guy dad who, you know, just wants to see his son no matter what. And, you know, and again, Loggia could play that role, and Stallone could play that role in their sleep. I mean, they got that down pat. And so it's, you know, quality stuff. But I was just, you know,
well, that's, you know,
even that opening scene, like, all right, really? He's brushing his teeth with hose water? Like, oh, come on, you know.
But that's the thing. It's crap that works. You know what I mean? That's the way I see it. Like, I look at it and I'm like, yeah, this is garbage that for some reason smells like roses.
Okay.
Does that make any sense whatsoever?
That's one way of looking at it. Uh-huh. So they have a trip from Colorado to California, and there's some ups and downs. You know, the child runs out of the truck, tries to, you know, get away, and they sort of reconcile and bond. I think that, you know, the scene where they go to have a steak and the son, you know, starts giving him dietary facts about cholesterol. You know, I thought that was funny too. I mean, there's Stallone sitting there with, like, you know, 1% body fat.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm sorry.
Kid's lecturing him about cholesterol.
Yeah, a huge criticism for me is, I mean, he's a truck driver. My stepdad, Gary, is a truck driver, and Gru has seen him. There's not one muscle on that man's body. He looks like a piece of veal. I mean, and there's Stallone, who's doing, like, there's a scene where he's doing, like, isometric exercises off, like, the hood of the car, like, push-ups off the hood of the car with his son. And I'm like, yo, Sly, you're not getting that jacked on the road by just doing some, you know, some push-ups off the hood of the truck. But as Andy says, you know, it's got to go with it a little bit. They do arrive at the hospital to see Michael's mom. When they arrive, Christina has died from complications during surgery. Of course, Michael blames Hawk for delaying his arrival and immediately leaves for the grandfather's estate. As an attempt to retrieve, Michael ends up with Hawk being arrested, which when he resorts to ramrodding the gated mansion, Michael visits Hawk in jail and forgives him. But he says he feels safer living with his grandfather. As condition of the charge is being dropped, Hawk is obliged to sign over custody of Michael to Cutler. What'd you think of that second stanza of the movie, Andrew?
It's absolute paint-by-numbers movie making. It's, you know, of course this is going to happen, and of course that's going to happen, because we have to get to there. So you can see every little twist and turn coming a mile away, and yet I love it anyway. I told you this is going to be therapeutic for me, because I'm like the only one, but I love it. I just really, listen, I watched this movie twice in preparation for this, but I've also watched it dozens of times, if not more, because it's enjoyable to watch.
Okay, do you want to just get to our final review?
No. This section of the movie is, is that middle part, which has to connect all the dots that gets us, that get us to the, they have to build up this thing where the final match is going to have the highest stakes. So this is where they do that, and they do it beautifully. As silly as it is and as contrived as it is, by the time they get to the end of this second act, the stakes are enormous. And that's the purpose of the second act. So I do like what they do, even though it's 100% predictable and 100%, like, that's not why you're going to see this movie. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I would say that the scene where Stallone takes the truck and smashes the gated mansion and goes into the home, I did think actually he portrayed a frustrated dad who's really sort of, I really did at his breaking point. It's as over the top. I thought that scene was one that sort of connected with me. Like, I mean, he did sort of, he's trying to work within quote unquote the system to get to his kid, and he keeps on getting rebuffed, so to speak. And so he took the truck and whammo blammo.
Well, there's a lot of stuff. One criticism I will make of this whole part is that there is a lot of stuff that they don't tell us. For example, they allude to issues that Lincoln Hawk had in the marriage with the daughter that were supposedly rigged or like set up by the grandfather. They allude to these things. Like, he says, you were tearing us apart. You hated me from the beginning. Like, I would have liked to have heard more about that or seen more of that to get a little bit more invested in the history of this family. But with that being said, I don't mind that the ridiculousness of him crashing the truck in the house either, because by then we already know what kind of movie we're watching. We know we're not going to get logic. Just sit back and enjoy. And the actors do a great job of selling us on this. You just said Stallone really connected with you in this scene as a desperate dad with literally nothing to lose. And it works. Why? Because the acting sells it. Between Robert Loggia and Sylvester Stallone in this scene, they make the ridiculous plausible.
Yeah, Loggia's great, but Loggia is typically great in most of his movies.
Yeah.
All right, Gru, we're going to take it to Las Vegas to the World Arm Wrestling Championships, where Hawk is hoping to win the big prize. It's $100,000 in cash and a $250,000 Volvo white tractor truck. He wants to start his own trucking company. Of course, we see the other participants who are much larger, much hulkier. Then Lincoln Hawk, Bull Hurley, who was the undefeated world champ for the prior 5 years and the odds-on favorite to win again. And we see some of the other competitors. They have these little vignettes, so to speak. John Grizzly,
Matt
Madison, Harry Bosco, and two-time Canadian champion Slammin' Carl Adams. When Hawk arrives, he sells his truck for $7,000 and uses the proceeds to place a bet on himself as a 20-to-1 long shot to win. Meanwhile, Michael learns Cutler has driven his parents apart and had been intercepting. And we do get an allusion to this earlier in the movie that Lincoln was sending letters to his son the whole time, and the son claims that he never got them. And Michael learns that, indeed, the grandfather had been intercepting and hiding letters that his dad had regularly written to him, stunned by his grandfather's deceptions. Michael steals a pickup truck and drives to Las Vegas to find his dad, which clearly most youth do when faced with the situation. They steal a pickup truck and drive all the way to Las Vegas.
Does he drive to Vegas, or does he drive to the airport and fly and somehow fly to Vegas?
What are you asking? I have my notes. Either
I don't
one
remember.
Sounds pretty incredulous to me.
Well, I think it's a son's love that drives him to.
Yeah, right. It's a son's love to, as a 12-year-old, steal a pickup truck and drive all the way to Vegas.
Whatever it
just
takes.
Just the whole notion. Just the whatever it takes. Here's where the movie kind of jumps off for me. This is, you know, Stallone's wheelhouse. This is Stallone's movie kind of wheelhouse. This is where you know, it really picks up for me. I think the movie does a good job with these vignettes. Sort of every competitor, in a weird way, has a little bit of a fleshed out personality or an appearance. They're able to do that in a very short amount of time. And, you know, Stallone, while the movie acknowledges he's smaller than the other competitors, I don't know if it's the way they shoot it, but it doesn't look ridiculous when you see Stallone going up against some of these big guys. It's I don't know. It's sort of in the realm of possibility. Maybe I missed something while watching it, but I never felt like Stallone was like, 5'7" going up against a 6'5" guy. Would they acknowledge he's smaller, but I didn't feel like he was really completely getting dwarfed by the other guys.
No, I don't think he was. I don't think he was. He looked overmatched until really the last match, which we were expecting anyway. So I agree with you. It wasn't. I thought the arm wrestling looked really good, actually. My nuts
looked. Yeah, it looked really good. Well, Hawk advances Groot to the final eight competitors in a double elimination tournament before suffering his first loss, injures his arm in the process. Bad Granddad Cutler is also in Las Vegas, summons Hawk to his hotel suite and offers Hawk a chance for a fresh start. And here's the offer. $500,000, $500,000, and a top-of-the-line semi, even better than the tournament's grand prize, on the condition that he stays out of their lives for good. But Hawk, ever the good guy, refuses. He returns to the tournament with improved focus and mental acuity. I just added that mental acuity part. And advances to the final match against Hurley. Michael finds Hawk and apologizes for misjudging him, which gives Hawk the emotional support he needs to compete. Over the top, Dad! After a long match, Hawk manages to beat Hurley and wins the tournament. A triumphant Hawk and Michael take their new truck, cash prize, and gambling winnings, and drives off to start a new life together, to start their trucking business. Amen, everybody. Andrew, what are your thoughts as the final stanza and how Over the Top closes?
Well, first of all, Hawk's a fucking idiot for not taking the grandfather's offer.
That's one thing we can agree on. That's one thing we can agree on for sure.
That is outrageous. But at the same time, like, here's where you're gonna want to hit me. I kind of wanted to see the development between. I wanted to see them get some closure between Stallone and Robert Loggia. I would have liked to have seen some kind of like understanding, something like, you know,
like a begrudging agreement.
Yeah, like face to face. Like, listen. This is what it's going to be. We can either wrestle over him or we can agree to whatever. Something like that, like at the end there. But all the other stuff, it just works. It just lands. I don't know why it shouldn't, because it's all so predictable. Of course he's going to get hurt right before the big match, and of course it's going to be his son who comes and inspires him to take down these behemoths. That's just what you expect from this movie. And it just, to me, it all works. I would have liked to have seen more than what we got. To me, it just works. It's, I don't know what, I don't know what I'm supposed to say, because I just, here's the thing about this movie. Okay. Everybody seems to hate it. Yet, everyone knows what the character's name is. Everybody knows the song that's associated with Meet Me Halfway. Everyone knows so much about this movie that they could probably quote it from beginning to end. So does that give it some merit? Like, how many universally loathed movies do you know that are so popular? As far as, like... What,
is it popular or is it notoriety?
It might be notoriety, but it might be notoriety.
When you're saying that, I'm instantly thinking about millions of people eat McDonald's, but they know it's not great quality. So, you know, to your point that everybody knows Over the Top, I don't know if everybody knows Over the Top. I mean, certainly, you know, maybe our generation does. But listen, all you got to do is turn your hat backwards and adjust your wrist lock, and there you go. You can beat a 300-pound behemoth in arm wrestling.
Yeah, and you walk out of the movie feeling like $1 million.
Yeah, it's just that simple. Gru, what was the production budget for 1987 Over the Top? You want to give a gander?
Yes, and I think I know this because I'm familiar with this movie. I want to say it was about $20 million, like at least half of which went to Stallone. like I think Stallone made like 10 or 12 mil for it, and that ate up like not two-thirds, but definitely more, at least half the budget. So I'm going to say about 20 million.
I have in my notes 25 million.
Oh, okay. Which was a lot for Cannon to spend. The movie looks good. Would you say that? It doesn't look like one of those B movie, you know, schlock pieces from the 80s that Cannon used to put out. It looks like Hollywood production.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, 25 million, and I know Stallone got at least 10 or 12 of that.
Now, again, I here's what I have in my notes. You could fact check me if you like, but I have the box office for US and Canada.
Can you see me now?
Hold on. No.
No? Because I could see me now.
No, it's still the... the AG.
My picture... Oh, wait. It's still the AG? Hold on. Let me try this again. Let me do this. All right. Now it's the AG. Sorry, everybody, but we're just, you know, we're getting...
I mean, we're... there you go.
Yay! All right. We got it.
There
it just,
you go.
It just showed
all
up.
Right.
I don't know why. Hey, what's going on? Haven't seen you in a while.
All right, everybody.
Okay. So
right,
anyway.
There you go.
All right. So where are we?
You wanted to take a gander? I have the box office numbers for Over the Top for U.S. and Canada total.
Yeah, it was a flop. It was, I'm going to say, I think U.S. it made like 17 or 18 million. Add in Canada, probably another 4 or 5. So I'm going to go 20, 21.
I have 16 million in the U.S. and Canada.
All right, that's bad. That's bad. For 1987, Sylvester Stallone, that's bad.
Mm.
That's a bomb right there.
Where was he right now in the Rocky franchise? Was this coming off of 3?
No, this was coming off of 4. I think this was right after Cobra.
Okay, that'll help factor in my notes on my final review. I was just curious about that. So this is after 4.
Yes. He's between 4 and 5 at this point.
Crew, let me give you a little bit of a taste of the critical response to 1987's Over the Top. I mean, Andrew's already admitted that the movie's been fairly universally reviled, but Rotten Tomatoes gave a tomato meter score of 32% based on 15 critical reviews.
Wow, that's hot. I'm glad you didn't ask me because I would have went like 12, 13%. I would have gotten that way off.
Let me just give out the numbers on this one. Metacritic gave Over the Top a score of 40 on the 1 to 100 scale based on 12 critical reviews. IMDb gave Over the Top a 5.8 rating out of 10 based on 54,000 user reviews. And let me give you a couple of reviews. I love these. I love these like quick little hitters. Pat Graham for the Chicago Reader said, the way to a kid's heart is through his daddy's biceps, though this big daddy looks more like Terminal Dada. William Wolf from Gannett News Services said, granted that it's his ticket to riches, but you think by now even Sylvester Stallone might be bored by playing underdogs who beat the odds and become winners. Janet Maslin of the New York Times said one of Mr. Stallone's more muddled efforts, but by no means a flop on the order of Fist or Rhinestone.
Fist. I like Fist.
Fist. The Washington Post, Paul Anastasio said, from the ongoing search to find new arenas in which Sylvester Stallone against overwhelming odds triumphs through exercise of the manly virtues, comes Over the Top, a movie about arm wrestling. What's next? Crab soccer.
Did they really say that?
Yes. Andrew Grutius, you are the archivist for the Stalloniverse. On the official scale of 0 to 5, how many Lincoln Hawks do you give 1987 Over the Top?
I'm going to give Lincoln Hawks Over the Top. Wait, what?
How many Lincoln Hawks do you give 1987 Over the Top?
I'm going to give it 4 out of 5, and here's why. I love this movie. I do. The reason that I can't give it 5 out of 5 is because I know its imperfections. Like, it's, you know, there are things that I don't like about it. But as far as beginning to end, I can watch this movie anytime, anywhere, and enjoy it just as much. I think the supporting characters are all really well done, with the exception of the mother. They just let her sit there and just die. But everybody else, you know, they got Bull Hurley, they got the grandfather. Even Terry Funk has some good stuff. The lawyer, you know, the Cutler's lawyer, he's such a smarmy little twit. And you know, when he visits him in the jail cell, like all that stuff. Like, it's paint by numbers movie making, but I love every minute of it, and I'm still trying to figure out, if it's so hated, how come everybody knows it? And they do.
Like, everybody knows it?
They do. Like if you ask like the Rocky guys on the Last of the Action Heroes podcast network. Okay, I've listened to most of their reviews of Over the Top, and most of them, I think Ryan especially, they hate this movie. They absolutely hate it. But they know everything there is to know about it. They can quote it from beginning to end. They've seen it so many times. That's not a movie. Is it just a movie you love to hate? Is it a really bad? Is it the worst, or is it the best bad movie ever made? Because I don't look at it like a bad movie.
Okay, but what I'm trying to sort of clarify is it because it's a quality critical piece of filmmaking, or is the movie notorious, so to speak, for having a big A-name, A-list actor, and let's just say underdelivers. I'm not going to blame whoever, but, you know.
Well, take some.
And it's, you know, I think it's also, it's a unique, you know, the arm wrestling thing is kind of unique, sort of a backdrop for a movie. I think so, anyway.
Well, all right, so it's a high profile, it was a high profile flop. Okay, that everyone still seems to hate. Is there another one that you could think of from another guy in our realm, like Bruce Willis or Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah, I could think of.
Okay, give me an example of, like, I think Bruce. Give me an example of a high profile bomb that everybody loves for some reason from one of those.
Oh, okay, I don't know about everybody loves, but now you're gonna do the everybody loves.
Or that everybody hates. I'm sorry, that everybody hates, yet they know all about it. They can quote it. They can name every character. They can, you know, they know so for a movie that they know so much about. Like, you know, I saw, what's a movie that I hated that I saw recently? Oh, I saw Thor: Love and Thunder. I hated it. I can't remember one thing about it. Why? Because I hated it. Yet, and I'll never watch it again. There's no reason for me to ever watch it again. So, like, this movie, I and other people, we're so familiar with it. And you just don't become familiar with movies you hate. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I thought, now certainly I don't even remember the title, actually, but I'm thinking about the Schwarzenegger action hero, that whole send-up. He did,
yeah, the last action hero.
Last action hero, but I can't quote.
Right, you know, because it's not a good movie, and that's why you don't know it.
All right, well,
right, makes sense, doesn't it?
Yes, yeah. But you're also talking about, Gru, a very specific genre podcast or group of podcasts, and you know that the podcasters, those guys, have dug in deep on Stallone, so you know that they're going to know, for the most part, every nook and cranny of a Stallone movie, good, bad, or otherwise.
I don't know. Can they go over Driven from beginning to end? Like, as bad as that one is, because I can't. I've seen it once, and it sucked. So why would I ever see it again? I'm just trying to figure out why I love this movie, and very few others do. I can't figure that out. That's why I wanted to do it. I wanted you to help me.
Well, you're a huge fan of Stallone, and I think when you like something, you super like it, and maybe sometimes, I don't know. Does that cloud your judgment? I don't know. I mean, I've heard you criticize some of the your big idols before too. So I don't know. I know when you're in, you're all in. So I mean, to me, let me tell you, because I think I'm a little bit more
objective,
balanced.
Okay, I'll give you that.
All right, I won't give you the fair and balanced, but I'll get a little more balanced. So, and I didn't even put my notes in for this for some reason. I'm looking at my notes and I left that blank. So, good. Again, I agree with you. The acting, I think, is solid. I mean, Robert Loggia is, he's just a standout. Scarface, Independence Day. I mean, the guy is just a great quality character actor. And, again, it's well acted, as Gru mentioned. There's a bit of production in this. And I did like the arm wrestling stuff. I mean, where I really, really – okay, it's my review, damn it. So that's where I really, I really, really keyed in. Bad – I asked you about where was Stallone in his career. You mentioned post Rocky IV. I'm only going to surmise this, so I feel like here is where maybe Sylvester was starting to look at vehicles to take him away from just the hardcore action realm. And I can almost see the pitch here where it's a family drama, but you're going to give them the backdrop of action with the arm wrestling, and it just, the material is not strong enough for me as a viewer to support it. And I think, and again, I don't know Stallone's career in and out, but I know at some point he made a much more conscious effort to kind of move away from the action stuff. And we know that for the most part, most of that stuff didn't hit. So I feel like here he's in that little bit of that purgatory. I feel like he wants to he wants to move away from the action. And but what were you going to expect from a Golan, a Canon, Kuroko, I don't know, whatever company production here? Even Stallone mentioned, I was going to get paid, and who cares if anybody ever saw the movie? So. Here, I would give the movie 2 Lincoln Hawks. I didn't turn it off. It kept my attention. The arm wrestling stuff, I sat up on the couch. I remember that. That was all right, because that's his wheelhouse.
Right.
Stallone, at that stage of his career, was still a physical specimen, and he emotes well. And, he emotes well, and, he's able to make all that stuff very, very real. But I'm looking at the reviews, and the guy from the Washington Post hit it again. It's almost like a Rocky movie in a sense, just putting it into arm wrestling. He's going to overcome all these odds. And again, I know there's bigger pieces in the plot, but you're taking this guy and overwhelming odds, and somehow he's going to survive. And I've seen it before, and I've seen it better done by Stallone. The movie kept my interest. I never turned it off. And it's fairly competent in some areas, but the whole setup of a family drama, action set pieces, truck driver, arm wrestling, mishmashy. It's mediocre at best.
Okay, but at least you didn't say it was laughably bad, which is what so many people do with this movie. They treat it as like his, I don't know, the day the clown cried or something.
That's pretty messed up, Andrew.
Yeah, they treat it as if this is like the big black mark on his career, and I just don't see it that way. And I don't think you see it that way either. You see it as a mediocre Sylvester Stallone vehicle.
No, but okay. So did this kick off that little? Again, I don't know if it's a down period, but was this in the sort of where he started to take a little bit of a dip in his career?
Box office wise, yes. I think this came out.
I mean, where was Tango and Cash?
So after this,
which I forget with Donald Sutherland.
Yeah,
Lockup. With him.
Yeah, and yeah, so after okay. this, I don't know if he did anything in 1988. This came out in 87.
Right.
Lockup and Tango and Cash both came out in 89. Lockup was a bomb. Tango and Cash was a hit. Then came Rocky V, no pun intended, knocked him down. But I think then came like Cliffhanger. But then came Oscar. So he's kind of going back and forth here, and then into the 90s he gets into more like, you know, like he did that movie with Sharon Stone, he did Demolition Man, you know, those kinds of things. Like, but I guess you could say that this was the end of his dominance, his solo dominance, because from like 82 to 86, 87, he was the number one star in the world. Maybe him, Tom Cruise, and Schwarzenegger. So I would say that this one publicly knocked him down a little bit. I still love it.
Yeah. When I take a step back, you know, that's how I felt, that maybe, and I didn't read anything about it, but maybe this was a somewhat of a conscious effort to dip his foot in the pool of something a bit more meaty. And again, I don't think it is because the material doesn't support it. But
I agree.
You know,
with
maybe I could see the pitch where, you know, it's like, you know, hey, well, you know, we're gonna do a family drama.
You're gonna get your Academy Award for this. I could see.
Well,
I could see
going.
No, I could. That's how those guys. You saw the documentary. That's how they sell it. Oh, you're going to get the Academy Award. You're going to win all the awards. This is going to be your Spartacus, Sylvester. You've got to cut. Like, I could totally see them trying to pitch this in that way, and it was probably written that way. It just when it, you know, you can't do all that you want to do if you're cutting it to 90 minutes. You know, it definitely needed to be longer, in my opinion.
It's funny, when I saw Menahem pitch that to Stallone, he had his shirt open with the chest hair and the six gold necklaces around around his neck. Come on, Sylvester.
The cigar.
All right, Gru, before we close out this Stallone-verse dip with Van Damme, give us one thing you're watching this week.
One thing I'm watching this week, I'm a little late to the party on it. It's called Only Murders in the Building, with Steve Martin, Martin Short, and Selena Gomez. It's really funny. It's probably a little more cerebral than it has to be. I think it relies too heavily on the gimmick. But you get Steve Martin and Martin Short yucking it up. I think they've had two complete seasons. I'm in the middle of season one, and I'm really enjoying it. And I think they've signed for a third, so that must mean good times ahead. So yes, Only Murders in the Building. I believe it's on Hulu.
It is on Hulu.
I've been watching. Yeah. What about you?
I wish those guys good health. So they're season three. I mean, at this point, I actually this podcast will always be notorious because Andrew actually said Selena Gomez.
I did.
Selena Gomez.
Selena Gomez.
Anyway, I'm watching this week The Black Phone, 2021 movie on Peacock, starring Ethan Hawke as the Grabber. And it is a period piece set in the 1970s, and Ethan Hawke plays a serial child abductor.
Ooh.
And he abducts a young man who is thrown into a soundproof basement with one black phone in the basement. The black phone is disconnected, so it doesn't work yet. Somehow the phone rings, and the boy is given a series of clues on how to perhaps escape his dire circumstance. A bit of horror, but really suspenseful and done in a way where the scares are really off scene. Not a ton of blood and gore. It's done by Scott Derrickson, who I believe was supposed to do the Doctor Strange sequel. I think we had talked about it.
Yeah.
And And it's on Peacock. It was in the theaters. Super enjoyed it. 2021, The Black
Phone. Never heard of it, but it sounds interesting. Sounds hilarious.
No, come on. It's a more of a
no,
of a
it
serious,
does sound. I like Ethan Hawke, and it does. And
I so
and
do
it,
I.
It sounds. It sounds like a. I like mysteries like that. I like.
Yeah, and he's really against cast here. He plays.
He's a bad
guy. Super creepy bad guy. Yeah. Yeah, and it's really. It's a nice, delicious take. He does a great job. Really
nice.
Good. Really
have
good.
You seen Only Murders in the Building?
I did see like most of season one. I did enjoy it. I don't know why I didn't stick with it. It's so much on streaming. But I did enjoy it. I did enjoy it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Selena Gomez, kind of a unique pairing, probably a way to connect a younger audience perhaps with this project. Yeah, I can't. I know I enjoyed it, but for some reason I didn't follow up with season two.
Hmm. Well, I'm about halfway through season one, so I'll let you know what I think.
I think I had to finish up. I had to binge watch Below Deck, the Australian.
Yes.
Whatever. I was watching Real Housewives of Tampa or something like that. I think.
What's that? What's that show that they that it's all about? Like they can't. Hook up like that, like
oh, that's on, yeah, that's on Netflix. And I know what it is. Oh my god, I'm drawing a blank, but it's great. They pick like 12 of the most attractive,
yeah,
like the guys are ripped, no body fat, the girls are all fake boobs, you know, and just beautiful. And then like they give them like 24 hours to like kind of mess around, and they really don't because they're trying to get a feel for everybody and everything. And then they have like this little robot AI thing that talks to them, and she's like, it's a girl, and she's like, the rules, you know, and they have, you know, and then of course they have to survive like the next 8 weeks. And every time you hook up, they deduct money from like
right.
the total prize winning, and
yeah.
there are cameras everywhere. And so,
yeah, it's so trashy, but I loved it anyway. I remember,
no, it's great.
I forgot
it's
the
great.
Name
yeah,
of
yeah.
it, but I want to see what's going on with that.
Is it called? No, it's not. Are You the One? I'll get it for the next podcast. Speaking of our next podcast, Andrew, in 1 month's time,
what do we got?
Our next Van Dammit podcast. It's our second and final 80s cheese pick'em. As myself, Mr. Evan Moody, I have selected the 1986 Shaven Chest hockey fighting sports drama extraordinaire, Young Blood, starring
yes.
Rob Lowe, Patrick Swayze. And Van Damme's Death Warrant,
Cynthia Gibb.
Oh. The Ice, the Fire, the Fight to Be the Best. Gru, 1986, Youngblood.
I love that water bottle scene with her.
Oh, yeah, that is a good one, yes.
That's a great scene. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. I haven't seen Youngblood in a long time. I'm looking forward to watching it again and again and rewinding it and again.
You know, that is one like 80s love scene that I remember.
Yeah.
I was like a young Evan Moody's privates probably got a little jilted on that one.
Yeah,
right there.
So Youngblood will be fun because I remember loving the you know, like the fighting and all that stuff. And I remember the bad guy's name, Racky. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
But I don't remember much else about it. So I'm looking forward to it. That had like Ed Lauder. Good actor in that one. He was like the coach, I think.
Yes, and it's very funny. I'm thinking about your choice and my choice. It's arm wrestling and ice hockey fighting.
There you go. That's pretty much where we are.
Yeah, that's the best we can give you guys.
What about on our next, what's our next Nothing Worthwhile?
Oh my God, my Alexa's going off. Alexa, shut up! I'm glad you asked, Andrew. Next week, we return back to the mothership, Nothing Worthwhile, as we will go back to one of our core pillars, core subjects that Gru and I love so much. Lots going on over the summer with World Wrestling Entertainment, the WWE. Andrew and I will discuss the major stories surrounding the WWE, the biggest one being Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Next week, Nothing Worthwhile with Moody and Gru return for Vince McMahon. Gone.
Mm.
Gru, excited to discuss the recent coming and goings with this great sport of ours.
Yes, I mean, this is one of the biggest things. I mean, this is one of, like you said, it's one of our pillars, and Vince McMahon has been responsible for all of it. So this is a big thing, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say about it. I'm looking forward to hearing you respond to what I have to say about it and my thoughts. So
likewise, my friend.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting.
All right, a lot of stuff happening with WWE over the summer. We'll get Andrew and I's thoughts. All right, crew, this is it for our special episode of Van Dammit as we looked into the vast world of Stalloniverse. Andrew and I will bid you a fond adieu. And Andrew, why don't you take us out of here?
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us again. I know you've been patient. It's been a while, but we are back in black, ready to roll. We hope you've enjoyed this stroll back to 1987's Over the Top, one of my favorite movies of all time. Evan's laughing. And next week, of course, we'll be coming back with Vince McMahon Gone, followed by Van Dammit, which we'll be talking about Youngblood. That got our Youngblood going. You got to understand that. So
let me ask you a question. Is your number one movie of all time Norbert?
No, it's North. Remember North?
Yes.
But ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for joining us today. And until next time, I just want to tell you, no retreat.
No surrender.
See you next time.
Not too cow, everybody.